There once was a king who had a kingdom so vast that he ruled it by proxy. He sent ambassadors and those that he thought would best represent his points of view, his thoughts. They would issue his commands and decrees. And in his vast kingdom, in the farthest reach, was this one isolated little country. And it had its share of problems. Some rebels and stiff necks and those that did not want to pay their taxes, much less keep the rules of the king. And they got together one day and decided that they would just kill those ambassadors and destroy those who came issuing the king's decrees and gathering his taxes. But living in a community was a half-wit, and a half-wit's better than no wit at all. And the half-wit said, you can't just kill these people any longer, because I've heard he's going to send his son. I said, well, we'll kill him too. Then there's no one left to send. And then we can do our own thing the way we want to do it. He said, if you kill the king's son, then he will no longer send his ambassadors and his son. He'll send his armies. He said, if you're going to kill the king's son, you have to make it look like it was his fault. Oh, they said, if we'd had half a mind, we'd have thought of that. So they got their minds together and came up with half a mind. And they planned out their strategy and how they would get rid of this king's son that was coming, since all the ambassadors had been killed. And they met him on the outskirts of town, and it was hip, hip, hooray, and hallelujah. They threw their coats down. They shouted and danced, and they put on a celebration. They took the king's son to a great banquet hall, and there they fed him an elaborate meal, and they gave him wonderful gifts, big gifts, little gifts. And the whole objective here is that if they give a gift and do not receive a gift of equal or greater value, then it's okay to kill him. Very much like Christmas in America. So they gave him all the gifts, and of course he had not become prepared to return gifts. So he took the quill and dipped it in the ink, and he wrote a note on the napkin. And then he folded it, and he gave it to the host who received it and looked at it. And he said, what? This? This is all you give me? After all we've done for you, just a promissory note? And they leaped for his throat to take his life. But this is the king's son. He's not stupid. He's very smart. He leaped through the open window and landed on his waiting horse and rode away on his wonderful white stallion with only his life and his horse. Pandemonium broke out in the banquet hall. Fingers of accusation pointed. It's your fault. You left the window open. Well, it's your fault. You let him park his horse down there. And everybody blamed everybody for letting the king's son get away. And all the time this is going on, standing outside looking in were three old hags. Their names were Hag number one, Hag number two, and yeah, Hag number three. And the three hags were ecstatic because now it was time for dinner. And as they swept out the banquet hall, there were always little nuggets of hope found in the garbage that was swept out. And as they were scavenging through, every now and then one of the hags would squeal with delight and lift her clenched fist with a morsel of tasty leftovers. But hag number one began to squeal a little above just a notch or two above the decibel point of food. She's found something great to squeal about. And as she's squealing, lifting up something in her hand, the other two hags, hags number two and hag number three, say, hag number one, what is it? And hag number one cannot hold herself. She's, we're rich. We're rich girls, we're rich. And hag number three looked at hag number two and said, no, we're not rich. And hag number one said, oh, yes, we are rich. Look what I have found. And she opened and read to the girls her note. To the bearer, upon demand, shall be granted the desire of the heart. She said, look, look, girls. It's signed by the king's son, himself. We're rich, I tell you. Hag number two and hag number three said, rich? We're not rich. Hag number two said, do you know that there's nobody in this community? They just tried to kill him. And they're not going to give us anything on a promissory note just because he signed it. Hag number three said, good point. Hag number one said, that's not a good point. We don't take it to the people in this community. We take it to the king himself. For the king will give us what these people could never give us. Hag number three said, good point. Hag number two said, that's not a good point. Do you know how far it is to the king's palace? Do you have a clue? We would die trying. And hag number three said, good point. Hag number one said, that's not a good point. You're dying anyway. You stay, you die. If we try, we die. Let's die trying. Hag number three said, good point. So off they went over hill and dale, hags one, two, and three, in search of a palace and a king who would guarantee the promised note that whatsoever things they asked for, they would have. And a guarantee on the signature of the king said himself. And as they traveled, there were times when hag number two and hag number three just absolutely, they were just the biggest pain, dragging them along, complaining all the way. But hag number one, she had a dream. She had a note. And every time hag number two and hag number three get to the point, she just couldn't drag them any further. She'd get that note out again. Look, girls, it says, to the bearer on demand. She had all the good parts underlined and highlighted, notes in the margin. But sometimes it seems a little too much even for the leadership. Hag number one was down for the count. She was exhausted. The note had been worn out. It had been written and underlined and highlighted until strange new colors were appearing. She said, girls, I'm afraid you're right. We've come so far. And here we sit on this old fallen tree and this rotten log and this low-hanging fog. I'm in a fog myself. I don't know. I don't know where we can go from here. I don't know which direction to go. And just as all three hags were right there, just about to give up, even hag number one, to the point that reading the note just didn't seem to have its magic anymore. The fog began to lift. And as the sun began to burn off the fog, to their utter disbelief, to their chagrin, just there, only one more stream to ford, just one more valley, one more hill. There it is. They could see it. It's the palace. It's the palace. It's the king's palace. They were that close, and they almost gave up. No one had to tell them, now, girls, let's go. They ran for their lives down the hill, across the stream, up the hill, and came to this odd-looking gate. And a little door opened from this strange-looking gate, rather oval in its appearance. And a voice went with the curious eyes peering through. Yuck! Who art thou? Hag number one said, sir, I'm hag number one, and this is hag number two and hag number three, my fellow companions. And who art thou? He said, never you mind, what do you want? She lifted her bony finger and she said, sir, we shall see the king. And he says, and what makes you think the king will see you? Give this to him. He took the note to the bearer on demand. Shall be granted the desire. Oh, Where ever did you get this note? Oh, say it's the king's son's signature. Where did you get this note? She said, never you mind, show it to the king. He says, wait here. And away he went, down through these magnificent streets. Glorious, glorious building, into this incredible palace. And there sat the king on the king's son on his father's right hand. At his father's right hand, actually, not on it. Makes him left-handed. And he says, oh, king, live forever, oh, king, live forever. Oh. And the king said, I will. What is your problem? You won't believe what I have. Sir, read this. And he gave it to the king. And he said, to the bearer on demand shall be granted. Son, he said to his son at his right hand. This is an incredible promise. And look, it's got your name on it. Oh, yes, said the king's son. Father, incredible. You remember whenever I went to that far country and they tried to kill me? I gave them a promise and they threw it away. Somebody found it. And look, Father, I wrote, whosoever. Father, someone brought the note. Who brought the note? Said the king. And the man said, sir, you will not believe what's standing outside the gate of this city. He said, well, bring them. Oh, sir, may I say to you respectfully, I don't think you want them in here. If they brought the note, bring them in. With all due respect, sir, you may live to regret this one. He takes off, goes back, opens this strange gate, which creaks as it rises on its large posts. And he says to the hags, hag number one, hag number two, hag number three, follow me in a straight line. Don't touch anything. And they followed him in. And you could hear them oohing and aahing in the land of oohs and ahs. Where do you sleep? There are no gutters, said hag number three. And what do you eat, said hag number one? There's not a garbage can here. And as they approached the great, marvelous palace, awe demanded silence. And they came and the doors opened and they stepped into the inner circle. And the king looked upon them and said, yuck! What is this? Sir, I tried to warn you. I told you that outside this gate, these are they that had the note. Son, said the king, about this note. Father, whoever has the note gets the promise. Who are you? And hag number one could not hold. I, sir, I'm hag number one. This, sir, is hag number two, and my esteemed third partner, hag number three. And might I say how happy we are? What do you want? Said the king. Hag number three could not hold her tongue. I want a mansion just over a hilltop in that bright land where he says, cool it, hag, you want what? A mansion over a hilltop, she said. That their note says. He said, I know what that note says, but it says, whosoever on demand, I want a mansion. Son, about this, oh, father, it's a big city. We got lots of mansions. She wants a mansion. Give her a mansion. Okay, guard, take these three hags. Get them a mansion. Whoa, 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 said hag number two and hag number one in simultaneous reaction. He said, what? Hag number two said, I did not ask for a mansion. Wait. He said, that's right. You didn't, did you? As hag number three was taken off to her mansion on a hilltop. What do you want? And hag number two just blurted it out. I want to live in this here palace with y'all. I like it here. Yeah. I want that room over there. No, I like that room over there. I want that room. Son, about this note. Father, it's a big palace. Hey, She wants a room. Let's give her a room. Guard. Yes, O King Lefer. Take these two hags. Get them a room. Take them by the health department. Get them a bath. And move them in. Whoa, said hag number one. Simultaneous. No. He says, what do you want? As hag number two was led off to the health department. A bath and a room in the palace. She says, sir, I did not ask for a mansion nor room in the palace. Oh, he said, that's good. That's right. What do you want? She said, sir, I would ask you a question. A little footnote about hag number one. Relatively speaking, she's the ugly one. Wart on her nose and flies. Bzzz. One tooth. No teeth is better than one tooth. He said, well, yes, hag number one, what is your question? And she lifts her bony finger and she points to the king's son. Son, your son, is he married? And the king's son said, father, about that note. Son, she wants to marry you. I know that, father. Look, she wouldn't have got this far if it wasn't for you. You and that note, that promise, I'm telling you. Zip, boom, pow, crunch, bang, gone. But father, that's my name on that promissory note. And if I don't keep my name, and if we don't keep our word, father, our kingdom cannot stand. I know, son. What do you want? Father, marry that old hag to keep my promise. Hag number one. Yes, old king, live forever. You can marry my son. Oh, yes, hot dog, she said. Get married, gonna marry. He says, cool it, hag. There are conditions, two of them precisely. One, you must be cast into the magic fountain and survive it. And if you survive it, you must pursue him and catch him. What, she said, throw me in a drink and run him down. No sweat, let's get it on. They took hag number one out. And there at the magic fountain, a guard each took an arm and a leg, and they heave-ho, one, two, three, and they tossed hag number one into the magic fountain. Why, she hit like a ton of bricks. She went down like a ton of bricks. She's going down so fast it even took the breath out of her when she's trying to hold the breath she had. And now she realizes, that's how they get rid of the hags. I'm doomed, I'm dead, I'm done. And as she is just about to swoon and pass out, her feet touch bottom. Hope leaps fresh in her heart. And with a mighty thrust, she gives it everything she got. And she points her fingers up and she's flying through the water, but it's too late, it seems. Her cheeks are stinging for lack of oxygen. Her brain is swooning. She's almost unconscious, just about to inhale the water that would kill her. She breathes in air as her head surfaces. I made it. And she looks down and in the water is the reflection of her countenance. The zits are gone. No zits. Even a wart is gone. Oh, my hair. Coiffured. Blonde. Manicured nails. Oh, My garments are so perfectly pure. Something beautiful. She wrote that song. If you look in the top left corner, written and arranged by Hag number one. Something good. Excuse me, Hag number one? Oh, yes. It's time to go to your room full of mirrors. She said, no. I'm beautiful. Take me to your leader. They said, no. Follow us. And they took her into a room filled with mirrors. And there she looked upon herself. Her hair was perfect. High cheekbones. Nice, pouty lips. She's beautiful. Yes? Hack number one, it's time to pursue the king, son. Later, she said, right now, I'm beautiful. I just want to look at myself. Okay, then we tell the king's son the deal's off, right? No, she says, and with a swift kick like Miss Piggy, that door's off the hinge. I'm ready. Take me to him. And in her beautiful slippers, her magnificent evening gown, perfect hair, sparkly little things on her high cheekbones. There he is sitting on his white horse. He's gorgeous. He's beautiful. I mean, her heart, you can hear it pounding. She is thinking, why not now? And she eases up closer and closer. Oh, she says, you look great. He says, and my, have you ever changed? And she thinks, now's my moment. Why wait? She leaped for him. If I get him now, it might as well be as good as getting him later. If I catch him now, it's same as catching him later. He's no fool. He spurred that horse. The horse leaped. She landed flat on her face, jumped up over her pouty lips. He says, you must pursue me and catch me. And off he went on his horse. Now she's starting to get a little, well, her heart's pounding a little fast. This is going to be fun. Pursuit. She takes off. Well, these shoes, these boots were made for walking, but these shoes were not made for running. She kicked off those high heels, and she's giving everything she's got. He's out of sight around that corner, but she knows he can't be far. She's putting on the steam, pumping up the energy. And she's in a full stride coming around the curve when she blows her left hose. Does a Ford 1.5 and gets an 8.3. She comes up dusting herself off, and her pretty gown has a tear in it, and her hose are blown, and he's nowhere to be seen. He's not anywhere in that road. And she looks out. There he is out in the middle of a briar patch, sitting on the horse, arms folded, smiling, rather humorous. She says, wait a minute. I came down this country road. I blew my hose, and I have torn my gown. And I'm getting dirty chasing you. You think I'm coming out in that briar patch after you? He's got this little twinkle in his eye that just drives her nuts. And he says, I'm worth it. She cleared the fence in a single bound. Proceeded to shred the briar patch. Now, not only is the gown torn, so is the skin. She's bleeding. She's scratched. She's a mess. She's looking more like her old self every day. And she stops, and he's nowhere to be found. And she looks, and on yonder mountain on the top there, he sits on his horse, smiling rather curiously. Wait a minute. I came down the country road, blew my hose, cleared the fence in a single bound, shredded the patch. Do you think I'm coming up that mountain after you? And with a twinkle in his eye, he says, I'm worth it. Oh, don't say that. And she took off up that mountain like a dune buggy. Landslide, rock falls, dust everywhere. She pulls herself up over the last rock, and she stands up. He's nowhere to be found. Oh, no. There he is, out in the middle of a hot, burning desert. And heat waves. Na, 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 na. You don't think I'm coming out there for what? He said, she says, don't say it. And across the hot, burning desert, she goes knee-deep in sand, sapping every strength she had. You can't go on forever. She knows that. She crawls. And now she's down, just pulling her body across the hot sand with her elbows. She's spitting cotton. Her tongue is sticking to the back of her teeth. And he's there and so close that she can't even hardly lift her finger. And she mutters something. And she dies. She rolled over and she died. Dead as a doornail. And the king's son got down off his horse. And there was a little whirlwind spinning over her dead body. And he spoke to the winds, and the winds obeyed him and said, yes, O king, live forever. And he said, O wind, what were her last words? And the wind spoke and said, O king, live forever. She said, I have loved thee in life, and I shall but love thee in death, and I'll praise thee as long as thou lendest me breath. And I'll say when death dew lies cold on my brow, if I've ever loved you, I love you now. And she died, O king, live forever. If you look real close, there's a tear. There's a tear in his eye. And he reached down and he wiped death dew off her brow. And when he touched her, breath was a rising of her chest. And the batting of her lids. And her eyes opened. And she looked. And he took her by the hand. And he stood her up. And a moment of just trying to synchronize. Standing and thinking and seeing. And him. It's him. And she grabbed him. She said, I got you. I got you. And he helped her onto his white horse. Join her there. And off they rode together. To live happily ever after. Amen. I give you credit for thinking. Now think on those things. Don't survive a fountain to die in a room full of mirrors. I love you.